Welcome to Time After Time,
a non-sponsored, highly judgmental podcast about time travel
and love
and friendship
and the movies that bring them together into our living rooms.
I'm Helena.
And I'm Paige.
And maybe in an alternate timeline, you've already listened to this podcast
and you loved it.
Let's go.
You remember, we usually start with a song.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
Hanukkah, Hanukkah, come light the menorah. Let's have a party, we'll all dance the horah.
Gather around the table.
Oh, we'll give you a treat. Dreidels to play with and latkes to eat.
What about, you spin my head right round.
You know? You go. We could combine the two of them.
You mean like a mashup?
You spin my dreidel right round.
When you go, wow. Yeah, that's perfect.
We're on the same.
That's it.
Wavelength.
Yeah, great. Glad we aligned.
Wow, you know what? You can take the ladies out of the podcast. You can take the podcast out of the ladies.
It's so true. It feels good to be back for one very special episode.
Yes. Welcome back to Time After Time. We just sort of unceremoniously disappeared.
Yeah, because we got busy and, the world kind of came back online and we just sort of decided we'd said a lot about time travel romances.
Yeah, we actually didn't think it was fair to the genre for us to keep berating it.
Yeah, how many times can you beat a dead horse? I mean, I think it was still enjoyable. I tend to think that it was still enjoyable.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of work.
And there was family emergencies.
Oh, yeah, that is kind of when we stopped, wasn't yes. it? Yeah, yeah. And then we were like, I don't know if we want to keep going once the family emergencies had calmed down.
But we're back.
We're because
back. Hallmark was like, we're going to make a Hanukkah time travel romance movie with lesbians. And we're like,
what? It would be a dereliction of duty for us not to hop on the mic about this one, I think.
Yeah, it would be blasphemous.
Blasphemous to our from personal... the past. Famous.
Ooh, yeah. Blasphemous from blasphemous.
Yeah.
To our personal religion.
That is time
gay loop. Hanukkah.
Gay Hanukkah time loops.
That's all to say that we're here to talk about
Round and Round.
A movie that should have been called, like, Spin the Dreidel.
Yeah, I really don't know what Round and Round is about. Did you have any theories?
No, I mean, a dreidel spins round and round, but, like...
It's not like... I don't, like, associate those words with Hanukkah.
Yeah.
And I don't think this movie was trying to hide its association with Hanukkah either.
No.
Which, like, is what I would assume would be the marketing goal for Hallmark.
Yeah, but I don't think so. The Hanukkah movies are doing well.
Yeah. So. And, yeah, and there's a lot to talk about here, a lot to unpack. So, should we get into the summary?
Yeah, let's get right into it. In classic time loop fashion, we start with a prolonged waking up sequence. Rachel, played by Vic Michaelis...
Yeah, I would say so.
This is my best guess at how to say that name. Is in bed surrounded by papers she's been editing when her phone ring wakes her up. It's her mother calling to remind her to get the soufgan yot, otherwise known as jelly donuts if you're speaking non-Jew, from Goldman's Bakery before 2 p.m. so she can bring them out to New Jersey for her parents' big annual seventh night of Hanukkah party. We also see on the clock or something that it's December 13th, 2023. So, like, it's actually the seventh night of Hanukkah. As we are celebrating it in the year of someone's Lord, 2023.
Yeah, fun detail. Rachel goes to get the donuts, encountering Miriam, a nosy chatterbox of an old biddy waiting in line behind her. As she's in line, she also gets a call from her boyfriend, Columbia Professor Adam, who claims he can't go to New Jersey to meet her family tonight because he developed an airport cold flying from California the day before. I mean, who among us has not developed an airport cold? Rachel then rushes to what we have to assume is supposed to be Penn Station. The signs are a little off, but it's fine. To catch what we assume is an NJ Transit train to Montclair. While walking through the crowded station, she bumps into some guy, who we later learn is named Zach, played by the very handsome Brian Greenberg, and all the donuts go flying. He makes a half-hearted attempt to help her clean them up and then yells to her that there's a donut universe upstairs, and he has a train to catch. She notices at some point that he left a weird box of dice behind, but I guess he's gone and she's stuck with the weird box of dice now.
Also, I will say the very handsome Brian Greenberg was a personal characterization. So I'm sorry.
Yeah, Paige wrote the summary. No, I think he's very handsome.
Okay, great. Yeah, just checking in.
Oh, no, completely agree. I was going to say something. Yeah, hard agree there.
Great. Okay. Rachel makes it to her parents' house, sans the Sofganiot, sadly, and we meet her parents, Joanna, played by Nicole Oliver, and Stan, played by Rick Hoffman, of Suits fame, if anyone else watched
Suits.
No one
gives a shit about Suits, Paige.
This has come up before, and I disagree. Rick Hoffman was at the royal wedding because he was on Suits.
Okay, write in if you care about Suits, though. Come on.
We learned that her parents met on the seventh night of Hanukkah 36 years ago when Joanna was DJing a Hanukkah dance and Stan was a big old nerd who somehow won her heart. We also learn they're about to sell their massive house that we are standing in to downsize to a condo, which Rachel is being a real baby about. We also meet some lesbians.
Yes!
Her sister and sister-in-law, Shoshana and Bex, which, have you ever met
a more lesbian couple than named Shoshana and Bex?
Well, like, just like, have you ever met a Bex that wasn't a lesbian?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you decide that your name is Rebecca and you're going to go by Bex, like, that is the
you're
same
gay.
As coming out.
You're gay, yeah.
You don't have to come out.
No, you don't have to come out. We all know. It's fine. Also, just, like, Shoshana and Bex is such a great, like, Jewish lesbian couple. Mm. I'm obsessed with it.
And we also meet their cute son, whose name, I don't know. Maybe
I think his name is Noah.
Okay, great.
Which is a very, like, that's the son of two millennial lesbians. Like, it's perfect.
Sure.
Jewish millennial lesbians, I should say.
Other family members start arriving, notably including Cynthia, a cousin or something, who is working in publishing in England and so now talks with a fake British accent and seems to think that she's better than everyone.
Yeah, because she is.
Because she lives in England?
Yeah, obviously. She's very sophisticated. Finally, Rachel's grandma Rose shows up. She's been driven there by a guy who teaches art at her nursing home, who she desperately wants to set Rachel up with. That guy, it turns out, is Zach, the putz from earlier who destroyed all the donuts. They have a very OMG, it's you moment, and she seems kind of mad at him, but also returns his dice box, and he talks a little bit about D&D, because he's a big nerd. A little while into the party, the cousins are gearing up for an intense game of dreidel, and Grandma Rose pulls Rachel aside to give her an antique dreidel that's been in their family for generations. Rachel then spins that dreidel during the dreidel game, and the curtains behind her immediately catch on fire. What a night!
We cut to the next morning, except, of course, it's not the next morning. It's the morning of December 13th again.
Whoa.
Who saw that coming? Rachel does the classic, I had the strangest dream, as she's again woken up by her mother's donut reminder phone call. Everything happens the same way it did yesterday, and by the time she gets to the party, she's really turned around. Then this all happens again, and by the time she gets to the party this time, she confides in Zach, because he's a nerd who plays D&D, so she assumes he knows sci-fi stuff, that she thinks that she's stuck in a time loop. He takes a little convincing, but after she predicts a lot of things that are about to happen, he does the classic thing where he's like, okay, find me tomorrow, find me in the next loop and tell me this really personal thing to prove to me that you are time looping and I'll help you.
The next few loops are Zach trying to help Rachel figure out why she's looping and how to stop it. They go to his even nerdier friend who works at a comic book store. She does a lot of self-exploration because, as the nerdier friend points out, everyone knows a time loop means that you have to change something in your life. She discovers an old novel that she was working on that she was too afraid to try to get published, and the nerd boys help give her feedback and give it to the uppity cousin to pass along to her publishing friends. She also eventually realizes that a butt dial she gets every night from Adam proves that he's not actually sick and is partying in some bar, so she goes to confront him and break up with him. Also, at some point, she figures out how to say goodbye to her childhood home. Her other two theories are that she needs to stop the fire from occurring, because every night a fire happens, regardless of, like, whether or not it happens the same way. There's always a fire, and every day the donuts don't make it for some reason, usually involving Zach. So she fixes the fire thing, at least, and...
No, she doesn't. The fire extinguisher catches on fire.
What?
Yeah. In the loop right before they fix the donuts, she makes it so they don't plug in the dreidel lights.
Right.
And so instead, the fire extinguisher catches on fire.
Oh, I must have looked at my phone when that happened. All right, never mind. Anyway.
This all culminates in the final loop where she decides she needs to get the jelly donuts to the party unscathed in order to get out of the time loop. She convinces comic book nerd friend and Zach to drive her in his van, in comic book nerd friend's van, so that she doesn't risk the train station. Zach ends up inviting chatty lady Mildred from the donut shop to the party, and when they pick up Grandma Rose, it turns out that Mildred and Rose are old friends? Jewish geography! How nice! Also, Zach and Rachel have their first kiss in the car.
Unfortunately, when they safely get the donuts to her parents' house, there is an unwelcome visitor there as well. See, earlier in the loop when Adam called to bail on the party like he always did, Rachel was just like, whatever, I'm breaking up with you. Rachel breaking up with Adam made Adam decide that he loved her and needed to be with her, so he decided to surprise her at her parents' house. Instead of being like, hey, I broke up with this guy, let's get him out of here, collectively with her family, she's just stunned and does not do that. And then Zach gets all offended that she has a boyfriend and he leaves. So even though she self-improved and got the donut thing right and stopped there from being a fire, she did not get the guy.
Again, I don't know if she stopped the fire.
I think she did.
Okay. Rachel wakes up the next day, and it's actually the next day. December 14th has arrived, and this means she's sleeping at her parents' house. She is sad about Zach, and her dad comes in and is like, well, hey, we gotta go to your Grandma Rose's art show, where her art teacher who's mad at you will definitely be. He also sees the unique dreidel on her dresser and is like, ah, yes, the dreidel. I know it well. And she's like, what? And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, it loops you 7 times if you spin it in the presence of your soulmate. That's how I got your cool DJ mom to fall in love with me, and also how your lesbian sister got her cool lesbian partner. Rachel is stunned and is like, but Zach didn't love me by the end of the 7 loops. And Zad is like, okay, the dreidel can only do so much. You gotta go figure out the rest.
They go to the art show, and Rachel finds Zach and tries to explain about the lack of boyfriend and also the time loops. He's sympathetic, but is also like, I don't know you as well as you know me because of all the looping, and this is a lot for a girl I've only known for one day. He also says something that triggers Rachel remembering his special D&D dice protector box, and is like, wait, let me put my dreidel in your box.
Ayo!
And when she does, Zach is all of a sudden flooded with the memories of all the loops and is like, oh yeah, we did all that and we're in love now. They kiss, and then later we see the whole family and Zach enjoying the 8th night of Hanukkah together at Rachel's parents' house. The end.
This brings us to
Blast from the Past.
All right, so, I mean, this is a Hallmark movie that, like, just came out. So there's not, like, a whole lot about these people. I did want to mention, which I did already somehow get in, that Rick Hoffman was at the royal wedding. Which is so funny to me. That man was at the royal wedding.
I'm happy for him. Good for him, you know?
Yeah.
He seems like a delight to work with.
Yeah. Brian Greenberg, who is very handsome, is an NYU alum, just like us.
Oh, wow. We're the same.
Yeah. Also, he is very Jewish. He was born to Jewish parents. He was raised in conservative Judaism. He had a bar mitzvah. Went to Jewish summer camp. This is all on his Wikipedia.
That's really funny because now he's in this movie where he's like, I'm the cute Jewish boy.
Yeah. But like on his Wikipedia, he's like, I had a bar mitzvah. Don't worry. Also, wow. Here's the thing. Nothing more Jewish than this. He's married to a woman named Jamie Chung.
Yes. It all makes sense.
Who's apparently an actress, but she started out in the real world. On the real world. So.
Oh, really? That's cool. That's kind of fun.
Yeah. And here's a fun fact that is, like, fun maybe only to me. They got married on Halloween. Their wedding was a 3-day celebration consisting of a welcome dinner on Halloween Eve, to which the guests were required to wear costumes, followed by a wedding ceremony on October 31st.
Wow. Honestly, I feel like I know too much about Brian Greenberg for how famous he is, but I'm glad to know it.
Who do you think put that all in his Wikipedia? Was it him?
I don't know.
Was it Jamie?
That's a really good question. Do you think all this is on his Wikipedia because Jamie Chung was on The Real World, so she has, like, more pull than he does?
I don't know.
I don't know. Either way, I love him. He really, like, hit that, like, nice Jewish boy soft spot for me, which, like, it's always going to be a soft spot.
Yeah. Did you watch The Mindy Project?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same vibe.
Yeah. He plays a very significant love interest for Mindy Kaling on The Mindy Project, where he also is a nice, nerdy Jewish boy.
Yeah, it's great.
Anyway, Vic McAllis, the lady, there's less about her online, but she is a actor and improviser. Like, she is a comedy gal.
Yeah, I looked up her Instagram immediately, obviously, and was like, oh, comedy gal.
Yeah.
Also, I will say, her Instagram is giving gay, but I don't know if I should say that in public.
So on her bio on the Hallmark site, which I was like, if this is on the Hallmark site, that's kind of crazy. McAllis loves her family and is deeply passionate about ensuring people know that their dad is their best friend. McAllis is a massive supporter of the LGBTQIA2S+, and she loves to connect people with Trans Lifeline. Trans Lifeline provides both material and emotional support to trans youth and adults to not just survive, but live full and happy lives.
I cannot believe Hallmark put that on their site.
They put all of that on their website.
That's wild. about a Jewish movie?
Yeah.
Hallmark is, like...
But I do have
lefty under... Lefty as fuck.
I do have under this...
What, Jewish?
Jewish? Question. Because there's nothing about her being raised Jewish
or Bat Mitzvah and or anything. I kept going back and forth being like, she doesn't read immediately Jewish.
She reads like she's sort of trying to be Rachel Bloom.
Yes, yes. She reads Rachel Bloom, but Rachel Bloom is very, like, explicit about her Judaism.
Yeah.
And I think Rachel Bloom's humor is also, like, very Jewish, just in sensibility. And when I was watching some of Vic's, like, comedy, there wasn't anything that, like, screamed that to me the way Rachel Bloom's does. I feel bad being like, I wish she had been more explicitly Jewish.
I mean, you don't have to feel bad. It's...
Yeah.
If there's a chance that she's not Jewish, and that's not great.
Yeah. But it's very cool that she is so deeply passionate about supporting Trans Lifeline and gay aid organizations. That's very cool.
Yeah. And that Hallmark was like, fine.
Yeah, Hallmark was like, we'll talk about that. That's what you asked us to talk about. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, Candace Cameron Bure left, so.
Yeah, so true. We're in the post-Candace Cameron Bure era.
Is it Bure?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, might be. I don't really care about offending her, though. And then I have a whole section on Rick Hoffman where I just say, he was definitely raised Jewish and he was at the royal wedding.
Oh, yeah. He gives... I have to say, other than the main girl, everyone... in this movie was, like, giving extremely Jewish.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it was so jarring to be like, is she? When everyone else was like, oh, everyone in this movie is, like, genuinely Jewish. Yeah. And I can tell. I don't know.
Also, I don't have any information on her, but was Grandma Rose giving Carrie Fisher to you?
Yes, absolutely.
I kept hearing Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
Anyway. And then I just was, like, reading over an article about this rise in... Hanukkah movies on Hallmark. So it seems like there's been a couple, 1 to 2 every year since 2019. And apparently they have a sizable viewership. Last year's Hanukkah on Rye attracted an audience of 1.6 million viewers on its initial day of release, according to Nielsen. And that put it on par with a new Hallmark Christmas film, Twas the Night Before Christmas, which drew about 2 million viewers.
Wow, TV, traditional TV is really suffering.
Yeah.
That being, like, the best they've got, 1.6 million and 2 million, I don't know, not great.
Hulu also has gotten in on the Hanukkah act and made a movie called Menorah in the Middle.
I assume featuring Frankie, what was that guy?
Frankie Muniz
from Malcolm in the Middle. Is he Jewish? No, definitely not.
Okay. Anyway, that's it. So, you know, it's going to be 50 Christmas movies and one Hanukkah movie, but I think there's going to be 1 to 2 Hanukkah movies every year.
You know what? And frankly, that's like kind of proportionally the amount that there should be. I don't need there to be like a million Hanukkah movies.
Especially like this Hanukkah movie was better than a lot of the Christmas movies we've watched.
Yeah.
Seems like they put all their Jewish writers in one room.
And they came out with something.
Yeah.
They figured something out. I will say, like, one thing I did like about this movie was that they weren't, like, explaining Hanukkah, which I feel like a lot of the other Hanukkah movies are like, we must explain all the traditions.
Yeah. There was that one speech that Rick Hoffman gave where he's like, 18 means high.
Right. Yeah.
And I was like,
that was,
we know.
That was,
everyone you're talking to would know.
It was, and that was a jarring moment because the rest of the movie was like very much just like, we're here, we're showing, not telling.
Yeah.
You can look up the tradition if you wish.
Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Magic, science, just a dream.
So if you forgot, this is the section where we talk about sort of the hows and the whys of the time travel. And this is dreidel magic.
Dreidel magic. Ooh. And also, like, maybe a little bit of grandma magic.
Yeah, I guess. But I feel like maybe Grandma Rose's grandma gave it to her, and then it would continue to be grandma magic. But, like, we also know that it's, like, been around for generations, right? So Grandma Rose is not the first person to, like, hand off this.
True. I just like the grandma character. She's very nice.
Yeah, we learn the rules at the very end, very casually, from the dad character when he goes to, like, pick up the dreidel and Rachel is like, no. And he's like, don't worry. It only trips a time loop if you spin it on the 7th night in the presence of a soulmate. Very specific.
I mean, ultimately it proves that grandmas do know best because grandma was like, I want to set you up with this man and I'm going to give you this dreidel on this day because I think he's the one. And she was right.
Yeah.
He was the one. So there you have it.
Yeah. So dad says that you loop for 7 nights and after that soulmates connect. This is apparently this family's own like personal rite of passage. But then when Rachel's like, wait, but we didn't connect. Then he's like, Rachel, how many days are there in Hanukkah? And she's like, 8. And he's like, right. You got to go make your own miracles.
Okay. A little thin for me, but I enjoyed it. And I like that, like, it does give the two of them a bit of a sense of agency, which is something mm-hmm. we always have, like, a bit of an issue with sure. these movies.
Yeah.
So that was good. I also liked the fact that this wasn't really explained, but the fact that she, like, put her dreidel in his box.
If you will.
Every time.
Also, like, the reverse gendered of that is so,
so funny.
Nice.
So funny. I love it. The fact that she put her dreidel in his box.
Ayo.
And he remembered everything was nice because then they had, like, a shared memory.
Yes. Yeah.
But I was wondering, like, what happened with the other people who've used this dreidel? Did they all,
ooh.
Like, has the box been passed around? Or was there some other...
No, the box was given to him by, like, his grandmother.
Right. So that suggests that it's in his family, but it matches with her family dreidel. So,
right.
So does Bex remember?
This is sort of like a holes situation.
Like, the two families have been...
Yeah, like, the two families, like, that one lady...
Been at odds for...
Yeah, like, that one lady cursed the other guys, and then their grandsons had to, like, carry each other up
right.
the mountain.
Yeah. Okay, got
you know,
it.
You know, a whole situation.
Yeah, it's a classic whole situation. Stanley Yelnats.
Mm-hmm.
They were Jewish, right? Yelnats? With a Z in there?
No, it's an S, because it's Stanley backwards.
Oh, right, you're right. If it was a Z, they'd be Jewish.
Do you think Shia LaBeouf is Jewish?
Actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf? He reads Jewish, but I don't think he is.
I need to know.
Right. Look it up.
You can take this moment to pause the podcast and go watch Actual Cannibal Shia LaBeouf if that's not something that has come into your life. Shia LaBeouf, Jewish? Oh, yeah. His mother was Jewish.
Which makes him real Jewish.
Real Jewish.
Oh, he was baptized and bar mitzvahed. How cute.
Wow. Maybe that's what led to some of the...
He was confused.
Like, he's okay. Yeah. I think he's doing okay now. But
yeah,
then he was
yeah.
doing not well
he was not
for
doing
a few
great.
Years there.
He did some...
Remember, he made that movie about the clown, being a clown?
Yeah, and he did some abusing of women.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's also bad, I guess.
Also bad, yeah.
All right, back to this. Honestly, about, like, halfway through the movie, whenever they started talking, like, the grandma was like, are you using it right? Blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden, it sounded like a family dildo to me. And it, like, really took me out of it. The way they were talking about this dreidel. Anyway.
I didn't pick up on that, but I appreciate that you did.
This is one of those cases where I do feel like it's, you know, how sometimes in a time loop you can change things and sometimes you sort of can't. Like in this case, mm-hmm. right? Like if the dreidel lights don't catch on fire, then there's faulty wiring in the kitchen or then the fire extinguisher catches on fire. No matter what happens until they avoid the train station altogether, they can't get through the train station without her losing all the donuts. So,
yeah.
You know.
I always appreciate that kind of consistency and those sorts of rules. That was fun. I also really liked the fact that there were a lot of, like, time travel movie references here.
Yes.
They had done their homework, which I always really appreciate.
Except for one thing. The Palm Springs thing.
What do you mean?
At one point, he's like, you're time looping, like, in Palm Springs? And she's like, the Tom Cruise movie?
No. She was moving on to a different movie. She was moving on to Maverick.
Oh, I thought they were trying to pretend that Tom Cruise, for
no,
some reason,
no,
they were
no,
like,
no.
Andy Samberg's going to sue us, so we have to pretend that Palm Springs was
no.
a Tom Cruise movie.
No. She was like, Palm Springs, and then he, like, didn't get that reference, so she moved on to a different movie.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
But I also, like, obviously a lot of the references were explicit, right? Like, that was explicit. They have a conversation about Groundhog's Day.
Which was very sweet.
It was very cute.
I thought that was, like, some of the best dialogue, first of all, and also, like, the cutest, like, chemistry building between these two.
Yeah.
Which, as we know, we do not always get in a Hallmark movie.
Yeah, I think I have the conversation, like, written out in the romance section.
Okay, great. We'll talk about it later.
They have a time warp reference, which, like, obviously Rocky Horror is not a time travel movie, but it makes sense that they would say time warp.
Yeah, they, like, pimped her into doing the time warp at one point. It was very funny.
They also talk about the Terminator. And I liked, again, this didn't feel necessarily explicit, but I thought the first scene where we're, like, seeing her parents meet at a dance in the 80s was very Back to the Future coded.
Oh, I would agree with that. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There was also a multiverse reference. The nerd friend actually gets together with the cousin in all of the loops. Mm-hmm. They like, you know, start a little like flirtation in every loop. And he knows that there's a time loop happening, but he still gives the cousin his number. And she's like, you know, the one she wakes up, like she won't have your number anymore because we're in a time loop. And he was like, you know what? In the multiverse, like all the versions of this could be happening. So I have to cover all my bases, which I loved.
Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange.
Okay.
What have you done?
So here's where we talk about the consistency, plot holes, the rest of our sort of time travel potpourri. I'm going to let us go through some general things, and then I do think we need to have a special category for the New York City, New Jersey consistency issues and the Jew consistency issues.
Yeah, I agree with that. I believe in that.
But before that, I'm going to start off by saying I would never let anyone eat Cheetos while editing my book. That is the worst snack to eat while touching papers.
Yeah, that's fair. That's really fair. They have a big, like, editing session in one of the loops, and they, like, get all their snacks together and get them ready, and they pour out the Cheetos into a bunch of bowls. And you're right, that's a terrible editing snack.
More probably relevant consistency stuff. They allegedly edit this entire novel in, like, a couple hours.
Yeah, that was insane. And then, but then also, like, all of those edits are going to be, like, thrown to the wind. Like, obviously, maybe the larger points she can remember and do, like, a rewrite, but the smaller stuff, she's not going to know, she's not going to remember all of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they tried to frame it as, like, we're teaching you how to take feedback, but I was still sort of like, this is a waste of time. And also, you could not do this in a couple hours because
it's going to take you a couple hours to read it.
Yeah. And like after they go to the party, right? Like, it's not like this is the entire night. This is like maybe 3 hours.
Right. And it's like already dark by the time they're like editing the novel. Yeah. So I was like, there's no time for this. This is ridiculous.
Do you have anything that's not New York, New Jersey, or Jew specific?
I mean, I thought that the time travel was pretty consistent. They gave us very clear explanation. The rules were very clear. She gets out of it because 7 nights pass, and that is what it is. Like, those are the chances you get.
Yeah. It is interesting that, like, her dad seems to know the clear-cut black and white rules. So do you think, like, they sort of know that post the looping, they have to, like, fill in the next generation so that they can keep passing it along? Or, like, do you think he knew the rules before the looping started?
That's a good question.
Huh. Because I feel like you act differently if you know that no matter what, after 7 loops, we're going to move on.
Right. I think you would act differently. But it might make you more focused and, like, better at doing what you're doing, right? So, I don't know. Maybe, I mean, it's possible, it seems like his family is very close. So it's possible that, like, he knows his daughter well enough to be like, wait, actually, I'm going to take it back. Because it seems like the grandma did it without telling him. Like, he was surprised to find the dreidel on the eighth night. He was like, oh, the dreidel, like, you're doing the time loop thing.
How's that going?
You know?
Well, he knows how it's going, right? Because if he sees the dreidel on the eighth day of Hanukkah,
he's like, oh, you're done. You've made it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. I guess he must assume that she's fallen in love.
Right, but my question is, because he knew the rules and was like, 7 days, soulmates connect. Do you think he knew those rules before he did his 7 nights? Or do you think you only get told that post the 7 nights?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of think that you only get told it post the 7 nights because also the way that he talked about the lesbians. Because he was like, oh, you should have heard about their whole, like, it was very, it was very dramatic, as lesbians are. So, and again, show us that movie.
Yes.
Show us that movie.
Yeah. We're not there yet.
We're not there yet.
Star two gays or can be Jewish. They can't.
Can't be both.
Not both yet.
Definitely not both yet.
Okay. New York City specific.
Yeah, go for it.
I mean, I think the most glaring one is he says we have to, when Adam calls, he's at a bar in Tribeca. Somehow they figure out he's at this bar in Tribeca and they're like, we have to go to this bar in Tribeca. And then the next shot we see is of a sign for 44th Street.
Triangle below Canal Street.
Also, did you guys know that? Because that's one of my favorite ones to ask people, like, if they know what Tribeca stands for. Because a lot of people don't know that it stands for something.
Yeah, some of them think it's just a name. It's not.
See, educational podcast. You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
We came back to teach the children. What? Just take the B-roll of a different street.
Also, you don't even need to have the B-roll of a street. Just have them walk into the bar.
Sure.
I don't care. I don't need to see a street establishing shot. I know we're in a bar. You said, we'll go to that bar. And now you're in the bar.
Yeah.
Got it.
There is another time where they show them, they're like, okay, we're going to get on the train to New Jersey. And then they show a shot of the subway going over the Manhattan Bridge.
Yes! Oh my god, that was excellent. That was so good. I was like, what the hell? You're going the wrong way.
Yeah, so you can't fool us. Here's the thing, the Brooklyn to New Jersey commute is one I know very well.
Right.
Which also leads me to, is this man living in New York and commuting to Montclair, New Jersey every day to teach art at an nursing home?
I get the impression that his grandpa was in that nursing home, obviously. Mm. And I think that he maybe went out once a week or once every 2 weeks. And it's like his little like side hustle slash like way of spending time with his grandpa. And then now his grandpa's passed. But now that his grandpa's passed, he's like has all these relationships with these people. And he's like still doing it like sort of in his grandpa's honor because he's a nice Jewish boy.
He's a nice Jewish boy. I imagine sort of probably what happened is he was teaching this class and he was talking to Grandma Rose like, oh, like now that my grandparents are gone, like I don't have family to go to for Hanukkah. And she was like, oh, you can come to my family.
Of course.
Like, I think that was probably more what happened than he was just like, I'm going to drive this old woman to this party as a favor.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I think he was fully like invited to the party.
Yeah.
I think he maybe felt a little awkward about it, but like,
okay,
especially because Grandma Rose was definitely already talking up her granddaughter. Like, she could not help herself. She was like, you have to meet my granddaughter.
So the Jew stuff, a lot of it, like Helena said, they got right and they showed not told, which was really nice. Especially the December 13th, being the seventh night of Hanukkah, is also the night that both Helena and I watched this movie.
Yeah.
And so that cool. was, like, really nice.
I loved it. I felt very cozy. I was like, oh, I'm so connected to this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, also, like, I liked in the first scene, young dad brings young mom latkes, and I think she's like, no applesauce? And
very cute.
Yeah. Although I'm more of a... Actually, I guess I go back and forth between applesauce and sour cream.
I like the combo. I like it all in one bite.
But also, I don't... So I am very Jewish. Like, I was... Me and Brian Greenberg, same thing, right? Raised by two Jewish parents in conservative Judaism.
You should call him.
Oh, my God. No, he's married. I can't compete with Jimmy Chung.
No, you can't compete with Jenny Chung. There's literally no way. I'm so sorry.
Bar mitzvahed, the whole deal. But there still is a chance that, like, my Hanukkah read is not necessarily the same as everybody's. But, like, I've never seen particular emphasis placed on the seventh night.
Okay, I also clocked this, but I will say that I think they did have a good explanation that, like, jives with Jewish culture. Because it was more about the anniversary than it was about the seventh night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they celebrate, like, their anniversary on the seventh night every year, but like that's just their thing because they're like, that's when we met. And so everybody knows that, like, it's not that we give a shit about the seventh night because no one cares about the seventh night.
Okay.
It's because my parents specifically in our family have this tradition of celebrating seventh night because that's when they met.
Okay. But I don't know if she articulated that to Adam, right? Because when she's on the phone with Adam the first time, she's just like, it's the seventh night, I need you there. And I'm like, what?
I think that she was saying that because she had already established with him and also with the audience that this is the biggest tradition in our particular family.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that if you have no basis of like reference for Judaism, you might misinterpret it and think that the seventh night is the most important.
Sure.
That could happen. But if you are a Jew, I think that they provided enough explanation for why this family celebrates the seventh night.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Two other small things. We sort of talked about this already, but this movie does such a good job showing, not telling, that when dad starts to, like, explain that 18 is an important number in Judaism to his Jewish family, I'm like, what?
Why are you saying this? No, it's true. It rang really strange because the rest of it hadn't had any of that kind of talk.
Yeah. And you know that, like, from the get as a Jew, right? Like that.
Yeah, of course.
The word for non-Jewish listeners...
However few of you there may be.
Yeah. Yeah. The rest you can skip forward 30 seconds. In Judaism, 18, the word for 18 and life is both chai. So like 18 is a significant number. And like this was their parents' 36th wedding anniversary, which is a multiple of 18.
Yeah, which multiples makes it of important. 18 are important.
Yeah.
Not just 18 itself.
Yeah, I guess if you went to any bar mitzvah, I'm sure that you knew about this because you are supposed to give an amount to the...
They weren't checking what was on the check. Also, I feel like if you were a non-Jew going to a bar mitzvah and you were giving a check, you're just like, I don't know, an amount. You don't know that it should be high.
I don't know, because I did look at the checks on my bar mitzvah, and like,
well, of course everyone, you did. I'm saying the non-Jews did look at the checks.
I understand, but I'm saying that the non, but you, because you're also saying that sometimes you think the non-Jews just threw a number on there, yeah. And I'm saying that is not the case. I remember like every single check at my bar mitzvah was like correct.
Oh, all right.
But maybe just because, okay, I grew up in a place with like a significant amount of Jews.
Yeah, very possible. Interesting. Okay. Well, anyway, I loved that they were like, it's our double high anniversary. It was so sweet. I'm glad they threw it in there, even though they did have that like clunky explanation speech. Yes.
Oh, then the only other real issue I had is like, they're using all the Yiddish Jewish words for things, but they keep saying soulmate. And I'm like,
yeah, we just have a word for that.
Say beshert.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Say beshert. They should have thrown beshert in there.
I think they say kismet once, which is like, is also a Jewish word for fate, but like, you don't, that's not the one you say. You say
no,
beshert.
You say beshert.
Especially, yeah, if you're using the Yiddish word for donuts, you're saying beshert.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. Yeah, and before we got on the pod, we were talking about, in this movie, they use the word sufganiyot to describe the donuts, which is the correct word for the donuts, but both of us were like, I've never used that word before.
No, yeah.
Yeah, in both of our families, we just said...
Jelly donuts.
Jelly donuts.
Also, I have never once encountered a street performer singing Hanukkah songs.
Yeah, that was pretty funny, even in New York.
No, there's a street performer that we keep seeing in what is supposed to be Penn Station. And some of the lyrics, because he sings it slightly differently every time, some of the lyrics include, Hanukkah is my favorite holiday. Just because I'm Jewish don't mean I can't spread some holiday cheer. Take that latke and watch it disappear. I'll break out the dreidel and spin the night away. We got all them crazy nights. Hanukkah is what we celebrate. Five shiny things.
Wait, that's not even a song. Were those the lyrics in succession?
No. Oh, okay. No, those were just like lines that I caught here.
Okay,
and there.
I got worried that that was just like the way that the song went. I was like, that doesn't even sound like a song.
No, I think like, I think just because I'm Jewish don't mean I can't spread some holiday cheer, take that latke and watch it disappear.
Yeah, those
were connected.
That's a couplet, but otherwise I'm real worried about this guy.
Yeah. And I also want to know, I could not find any information. I want to know if like they found like that guy online singing Hanukkah songs.
Oh,
or like
I
someone
bet.
Else wrote the, like, I didn't, it seemed like that guy wrote those songs.
Very well could be. Very well could be. All right, ready?
Does their love stand the test of time?
Oh, here's the one time they use the word kismet, just to get her ex out of the way. At one point, she talks about how, like, she thought things were going to work with Adam because she met him at this, like, Jewish singles event and her parents met at, like, a Jewish singles dance. So she thought meeting him there meant that they, like, were kismet. And I'm like, but any guy you met at this dance, you'd feel the exact same way about. And it's a singles dance.
Right.
So
maybe it's not that magical.
Right.
You know what? Maybe it's kismet, but it ain't beshert.
Mm-mm. Take that to the bank.
Yes, you can.
Jew.
Where the Jews are.
Yeah. My last thing about Adam is I love the last loop that he is at the Hanukkah party for. Her dad still says, maybe this is the year Rachel meets her soulmate.
Yes! Oh my god!
Like, what a weird thing to say when her boyfriend's right there.
I loved it. I loved it.
All right, so now we'll move on to Brian and not... what is his real name? Zach.
Zach. Well, his real name is Brian.
His stage name. In this movie, they're trying to pretend he's a Zach.
He's a Zach. Well, he is kind of a Zach. You don't think he's
a Zach? I think he's a Brian.
Okay, fair enough. I mean,
his name on the Mindy Project was Ben, and he also felt like more of a Ben than a Zach.
Okay, fair enough.
As we sort of have alluded to, like, I'm into this couple. We, like, really watch them come together.
Yeah, great chemistry.
But I will say, in the beginning, I was like, I don't find this man likable because he could have at least, like, offered to Venmo her for the donuts.
Yeah.
He really just, like, runs away.
He fully runs away and is just like, there's a donut universe upstairs. Which, how dare you? You should offer to go to the donut universe.
Or, again, at least Venmo her.
Yeah, something.
The first time that I was like, ugh, What a mensch. In one of the loops, when the comic book nerd is, like, into the cousin, his character says, I think we're annoyed by her, right? Get on board. Because Rachel is annoyed by her
Rachel
cousin.
Rachel is annoyed by her,
so
yeah.
Zach is like, no, we're all annoyed by her.
Yeah, I really loved how he didn't take a lot of convincing, which was really fun, and he was, like, very on board with her and, like, excited about, like, this little adventure that they were going on immediately, which I think is so sweet and, like, just really won me over and made me feel like this is a nice little match.
Yeah. They really, really connect the night that they go to the bar in Tribeca, and she breaks up with her boyfriend, and they sort of, like, have this really nice conversation. That's when they first have the conversation about Groundhog Day, and he's like, so am I Andy McDowell? And she's like, no, I'm Bill Murray and Andy McDowell, and you're the alarm clock. And he's like, can I at least be the groundhog? It's all very
so
cute.
So funny.
And they, like, make a plan to get bagels the next day if she gets out of the loop, and she's like, you know, what if you don't remember this? And he says, if we have to do this 100 more times, I'm here for it.
Really very sweet. Cute. Although he won't know that it's happening 100 more times.
Yeah.
So.
More she has to do it 100 more times.
Although, you know, what is nice is we always have issues of consent in this in this arena. And there's a certain amount of, like, hey, I'm, like, with you.
Yeah.
Even though I, like, can't, like, actually be with you.
Yeah.
I don't think she should use any of the information that he gives her to sleep with him prematurely. But that
Which being said. She doesn't.
She does not.
This is a Hallmark. No one's trying to sleep with anyone.
No, there's no.
They've never heard of sex.
Sex doesn't exist. The closest
or alcohol.
The closest we get is her putting her dreidel in his box.
Yes.
Okay? Very hot.
And she's, like, notoriously into non-alcoholic Shirley Temples.
Yeah, what the hell was that? And then she was, like, knocking them back as though it was, like, an alcoholic beverage. Very confusing.
But I also was like, you're making fun of this man for being nerdy, and it turns out your novel is about a group of kids hunting for elixirs of youth? That is the same genre.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. That was one thing I didn't really understand about her, is that she was like, I'm not nerdy and don't know about, like, sci-fi stuff or, like,
fantasy
stuff, but I wrote a fantasy novel. It's confusing.
And then also, like, again, it's very cute. We do get to watch them have a lot of good banter and, like, fall for each other every day. But in the last loop, he gets so mad when that guy shows up, even though she's like, he's not my boyfriend. I broke up with him earlier today. You were standing right there. And then but he's so mad. And I'm like, what is he so mad about? He believes her that she was in a time loop. And he's still, like, really mad. And he's like, it's out of my hands now. And I'm like, it's not out of your hands. She's literally, like, putting it in your hands.
Yeah, I don't know.
But also, she should have been like, Mom, Dad, this man is not my boyfriend. Please get him out of our house.
Kick him out. He's not welcome here. Yeah, she didn't play that exactly right. I agree. I can understand him feeling like, look, he's a little on the back foot. Regardless. Mm-hmm. And I will say, in that time loop, the one where the boyfriend shows up, he takes, I would say, more convincing in mm-hmm. that time loop, because she just shows up at his house with zero context and starts, like, yelling at him to get in the van. So, like, in that way, I think he's a little more hesitant in that time loop than some of the others.
Yeah. But they do kiss in that time loop.
Sure.
Also, worth noting, in this Hallmark movie, they kiss twice.
Amazing.
Never seen it before.
Very hot. You just can't, these two can't keep their hands off each other.
Like you said, I love that he got to remember all the loops at the end.
Yeah,
because that is
great.
An issue.
It's an unevenness.
Yeah.
There's, like, a power imbalance when one person remembers a lot of stuff and the other person doesn't.
Yeah. And now they have, like, a shared dialogue memory that they, like...
And honestly, because it was only 7 loops and they did seem to have a pretty fun time on all the loops, like, it's actually, like, a fun adventure.
Yeah.
Not just, like... You know, like, with Groundhog Day, he's in the loops, like, he's done, like, 12,000 loops, and it's kind of a trauma.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, I feel like, because we've seen ones where only one person remembers, or, like, it was, like, Hot Tub Time Machine, where, like, the future is, like, very different, but you don't necessarily remember all the things that change,
right,
like your wedding and stuff. And I feel like it can be very isolating.
Yeah.
To be the only one with person in the whole world with memories of a thing. And so it's nice that she has someone to share that with.
I agree. And also the rest of her family, really.
Yeah.
Now they can all talk about it.
Sure, but, like, the specific actual memories of what happened on those 7 days.
True.
If you don't have anything more to say about Zach and Rachel, I do want to talk about the other unexplored romance in this movie.
Oh, what was that?
Rose and Mildred?
Do you think they kissed a little bit at camp when they were, like, yes. in their teens?
Mildred was talking about how lonely she was. Rose clearly doesn't... There's clearly no grandpa. Mr. Rose. Yeah, like...
Maybe they will. Maybe they will.
Maybe they will kiss.
Maybe they should kiss. They should spin the dreidel and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, here's a question. Like, let's say, like, Rose had to use the dreidel to get with Grandpa Rose.
Mr. Rose.
Is there, like, a once-per-lifetime thing? Or if Mr. Rose has passed on, can she use it
to find her a new second soulmate? Her golden soulmate?
Her golden soulmate.
I would like to think so. I mean, I guess it comes down to what you believe about soulmates. Is there only one? Or can there be multiple?
I mean, multiple, in my opinion.
In my opinion, also.
I don't know how Hallmark feels.
Maybe it's also dependent on the person. Like, if you feel like you only have one soulmate.
Sure.
You have to be open to it. It's like the dad says. The dreidel
can only take you
so far.
I think Hallmark believes in multiple soulmates because every time there is a widow storyline or like someone already has a kid, they have to be widowed, right? Because they don't believe in divorce. You can't,
definitely not divorce. Mm-mm.
So they have to believe in second soulmates because the only way that they'll let someone with a child be single is to be widowed.
Right. Right. Let someone with a child be single and then find love again.
Yes.
Yeah, because you could have, like, a sister who's divorced with a kid, but she doesn't get to find love.
No.
Great.
Wow. You know what I didn't say when we were talking about the Jewish stuff?
What?
I think it's her dad that says this to her to try to encourage her to, like, chase after Zach. He says, you know who else was doomed to fail? The Maccabees.
Wow. The story of Hanukkah. We must learn from it.
Which brings us to...
Ladies, did we just time travel back to the 1950s?
So here's where we talk about any sort of intersectional feminism politics woes that we have. And unfortunately, this means that I'm going to very, very briefly touch on the trope that's sort of been resurrected this year, that Hanukkah is a Zionist holiday.
Yes, it bears mentioning.
But we're going to try to do this very quickly and then get into fun things like who styled this woman. So basically, you can watch the Rugrats Hanukkah movie if you, like, don't know the story. But, like, basically, Jews were hanging out in what is their holy land, right? Israel, whatever. And Syrian Greeks came and took over and, like, wouldn't let Jews be Jews. And a ragtag group of...
Rebels,
known as the Maccabees, rose up and took their land back by force. And so a lot of people...
Notably the temple they took back.
And then, you know, there wasn't enough... They did the temple and then there wasn't enough oil to burn the Hanukkah lights. And then they lasted for 8 nights. Again, you can watch the Rugrats movie. or you can go back...
It's a sacred Jewish text, the Rugrats movie.
Or you can go back in time about 25 years to my... 5th grade Hanukkah play where I played the Antiochus leader.
Of the Syrian Greeks. You guys played the villain?
I played the main villain.
Oh my god. What a juicy role.
Yeah. Also, like, gender bending.
Yeah. Did you have a little beard?
JCC. I don't think so.
I would have demanded a little beard.
Don't worry. Like, 3 years after that, I got a beard to play a hobbit.
Oh, yeah.
A dwarf in The Hobbit.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And that's
another sacred text.
A sacred text and a classic paint picture. Maybe we'll put it on the Instagram or something.
But anyway, so that's the basic story. And a lot of people, especially this year, are claiming that that makes Hanukkah not only a Jewish holiday, but a Zionist holiday, which... It's funny to me personally because it, to me, reads as a story of, like, colonizers trying to come in and take over land that people are on and the people rising up and trying to take that land back by sort of any means necessary, including violent rebellion, which to me sort of reads it more as a pro-Palestinian story in this moment. But sort of regardless, I just want to say, like, it sucks and is anti-Semitic to equate one of the core parts of Jewish culture and, like, what my Jewish identity was growing up to, like, equate that with having to believe in Zionism and believe...
Modern Zionism.
Right? Because, like, yes, there is a definition of Zionism that is just self-determination by the Jews and that, like, they deserve a home. Right? And so, like, in concept, that is nice. But the way it is playing out in modern Zionism is something that we on this podcast are firmly against. And we just want to make that very clear that, like, us talking about a Hanukkah movie is in no way us agreeing with the genocide that is going on in the Middle East right now.
Which we really shouldn't have to say, but I think it bears repeating. Yes. And also, I think it's...
Even if you believe that Jews are entitled to a home, right? And I'm not necessarily saying that that's not true. I just, like, I don't understand why Jews would be the only people entitled to a home. You cannot build your Holy Land on the mass graves of other people. You just can't. So I just think that that needs to be said. And I also want it to be said that equating Jewishness with the land of Israel is definitionally anti-Semitic. And so it is anti-Semitic that Zionists want it to be a gotcha that, like, as a Jew, as somebody who celebrated Hanukkah my entire life growing up, like, I should not be allowed to celebrate this holiday without co-signing Zionism. And again, that is definitionally anti-Semitic. And so our celebrating Hanukkah and our celebrating this Hanukkah movie is in no way co-signing modern Zionism.
Jesus. It just floors me that we feel the need to say this. It's very sad. I think we were sending some articles back and forth about, you know, which parts of Hanukkah are most important in terms of, like, the modern definition and how people see it and how people interpret it. And I tend to appreciate the argument that Hanukkah can be more about the miracle of, like, community. And the miracle was not just the overthrow of an oppressive government, which that is a miracle in many ways, but the miracle of the, like, oil itself and what that represents in terms of, like, community and
light
and love and all of those sort of aspects of Judaism, rather than the idea of, you know, a particular homeland or a very rigid definition of who gets to be where.
Right. Yes. The articles talked about how in a lot of ways it's a holiday that celebrates the diaspora and celebrates us being able to find community and home wherever we are.
Right.
And that ability to find community and home and safety wherever we are is, to me, like, much more important and honestly actually goes against modern Zionism, which is trying to tell me that the only place I should feel safe is in Israel.
Right, exactly.
Great.
All right.
Gays. This movie does great with the gays.
It does.
Except that we want the movie to be specifically only about the gay couple and their looping.
Yeah, but that feels like more of an us problem, you know?
Also, I guess this is not explicitly gay, but the fact that her, like, go-to relationship touch point, her go-to, like, relationship advice person that she brings up is Esther Perel.
Yes, I loved that. It's not gay, but it's, like, progressive for sure. I do really want to see that movie. Maybe we should write that movie about the lesbians.
Yeah, and maybe that movie can also tell me what quinoa milk is. Which is a thing they bring
up. But that is, like, specifically a dog whistle for Middle America. Yeah. Because, like, anything, like, oh, these coastal elites and their fake milk, like, we're not. Like, remember in the...
Yes, that's what you remember. The one with Oliver Hudson.
Yes,
there was a Hallmark movie with Oliver Hudson and it might have been Candace Cameron Bure.
I think it was. I think it was, like, pre the split between Candace Cameron Bure and Hallmark.
And he makes a joke about gluten-free toothpaste.
Right. Yeah. That joke about quinoa milk in this movie was specifically, like, I know that this movie has been very hard for you all. We're doing Jews.
We're doing gays.
There are lesbians.
We're in New York.
We're in New York. Breathe. Here's quinoa milk.
Oh, also, I'm going to shout out Genevieve, my friend who watched this movie with me. Genevieve brought up the fact that, because at one point when they're trying to figure out what about her life she should change, because Rachel is a assistant to an editor. She's like, I always wanted to be a writer. I somehow ended up in editing. I'm assistant to an editor. And Zach says something like, well, sometimes, like, we're really helpful to other people to avoid dealing with our own issues. And Genevieve is like, so his problem with her job seems to be a problem, the problem of labor.
Like having to have a job?
Of doing labor for other people. Yeah, and it's also like, so we're supposed to take from this conversation that being helpful is bad, actually.
I think it was more, the point was more like, she's more of a people pleaser than she needs to be, and she needs to, like, do some stuff. She needs to work on, like, putting herself out there. But I do see your point.
Yeah, her being a people pleaser is sort of separate from her job happening to be the being the assistant to an editor.
Also, this is kind of back to consistency, but I was confused as to why, if she is an assistant editor and is in the publishing world, why does she need her, like, cousin who lives in London to...
Did you say cunt cousin?
I did not mean to say cunt cousin, but it did come out sounding that way.
No, but that's fair.
But that is kind of her character. Why does she need her cunty cousin who lives in London to, like, connect her with publishers? Like, she is in that world herself. You know, I think there are a lot of people who do editing, you know, and publishing work as their day job and also write their own stuff and eventually use some of those connections. Yeah, that's... That's pretty normal, actually. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing is, like, I think because her cousin was there.
Her cunty cousin. Her cunty cousin. You said it in your head. I saw you.
Her cunty cousin was there. And we wanted to visually see someone hand a book to someone else. You know what I mean? Like, her cousin was there. Her editor was not there. Yes.
It's just, like, they could have had her. You're correct. They could have had her do, like, literally anything else if they needed her to, like, hand it off to her cousin.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I will also say her cousin... So her cousin's doing this, like, fake British accent, and in one of the loops, Cynthia. Her name is Cynthia, right?
Sure.
Cynthia and Rachel have this moment where Rachel is, like, suffering, and Cynthia's like, oh, good. Like, I'm actually suffering, too. I'm putting on this front. And then she drops the fake British accent and starts doing her natural, quote-unquote, like, Jersey accent. And I was just like, oh, my God, Marissa Tomei from My Cousin Vinny is here. She is, like, just literally doing an impression of Marissa Tomei and My Cousin
Vinny. Honestly, it's a very good. It's a good impression, yeah. And I loved it.
But, yeah, I mean, I thought this movie was, like, honestly, like, the biggest crime against feminism to me was the outfit they made her be in the entire movie. That was so bad.
Yeah, it was not a great outfit. You know how in all the Hallmark movies, the girl's wearing, like, a red coat? Like, a red pea coat?
Yeah.
She had a blue pea coat. So Hanukkah. I like the Hanukkah representation there. I also will say, style-wise, she had several different Hanukkah-themed PJs, which was
That's true. The PJs were great, but in every single day...
Her main outfit was bad.
Puts it on every day, knowing that she has to go to this party. Like, it's not even a party outfit.
Maybe
it's like,
she likes the outfit, Paige. Maybe that's her style.
It's like high-waisted, like, corduroy pants with, like, a button-up and then, like, a sweater that doesn't actually... It's not cropped, but it also doesn't make it all the way to the top of her pants.
Yeah, it's wrong. It's all wrong.
I think the stylist was just like, this is the way New York Jews dress? I don't know. I've never met one.
I feel like it was more like she needs to be the every woman. You know, she can't be too interesting. So
sure.
Let's make her as bland as possible.
Well, they did that.
Yeah, they did.
She has some funny one-liners, but I found her overall very bland, especially because, like, Brian Greenberg is very charming.
Yeah, it's true. He really is.
But, I mean, but overall, like, this movie passes the Bechdel test. It has a lot of female characters. She has connection moments with her mom, with her sister, with her cousin.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of, like, self-growth that happens. It's not just about getting the guy. I mean, ultimately, like, that is the climax of the movie. But I do think the self-growth was important, too.
And, like, we learned that her dad did the same thing, right? So this is not, like,
The woman has to go on the journey kind of thing.
Well, though we do love... Here's the thing. We love when the woman goes on the journey because, as we've talked about, like, the high percentage of these movies, it's, like, the men that get to time travel.
Right, right.
So I'm, like, happy the woman went on the journey, but also if we frame it as it's only a journey to find love, is that problematic? Well, no, because the guy also had to go on a journey where the center of it was to find love.
Right,
so, like,
right.
I think... I just think it's cool. I feel like we very rarely get to see a cross-gender... time, like, even I'm thinking of, like, About Time, where it's, like, a pass down through the men in the family, right? Like, I feel like usually the lineage is, like, it's either through the men in the family or through the women in the family, and
yeah,
in this one, it's
right.
both, and
you're
that's
right.
kind of nice.
That's nice. They don't have weird gender stuff in this movie.
No, well, they had a lesbian daughter, so
so, yeah. I think, okay, here's my, like, theory on what happened in the sister's time loop. I think she didn't even know she was gay when she entered the time loop.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it the best of times or the worst of times? So here's where we talk about if you should watch this movie and in what context. And we rate it on our doomsday clock on a scale from noon to midnight. Oh, it's been so long since I've said this. Noon is notoriously... It's so bad. Gouge your own eyes out before you watch this film. And midnight is notoriously, it's like a party in your eyeballs. It's so fun. It's perfect. It's great. So noon bad, midnight good.
Wow. Really feeling the nostalgia flowing.
Feels
around
like
here.
We are time traveling it, back like 10 months. Yeah. Can you believe, like, we stopped doing this podcast in March, so it is only been like 9 months.
That's crazy. It feels like 100 years.
Yeah, so much of our lives have changed. Oh, mainly mine. But yeah,
wow. Okay, rating for this movie. I'm gonna give it a 9 o'clock.
That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah, this is a solid movie. It's very fun. The leads have chemistry. The time travel's good. It's not like the greatest movie I've ever seen.
No, it's not. It's not Palm Springs.
It's not Palm Springs, but it is. There are some jokes that actually made me laugh.
Yes. The Groundhog Day banter is very cute.
Very cute.
And we love a reference.
Now that I'm saying it, I'm going to push up to 10.
Wow.
Yeah, I think you should watch this movie.
Yeah. Did you see that the poster is also sort of like the Groundhog Day poster?
Oh, no, I didn't. Let me take a look. Oh, I'll do it after we finish recording. Sorry. I don't need to do
okay,
that right
take
now.
Take my word for it.
Yeah, I believe you.
Okay. I mean, I was going to say 9. I think I'm going to stick with 9, just to be different.
Okay, fair enough.
It is really good. It's definitely, I think it's maybe the best Hallmark one we've watched.
Yes, I agree.
Second is still the Mallory Sisters
yes,
one.
Yes, correct.
We'll never know if it was Tia or Tamara who was in that movie.
We simply can't know.
But it's really good, and, you know, representation is always nice to see. Happy for Rick Hoffman that he has a life after Suits.
I'm happy, but I really don't care about Suits.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the leads have chemistry, are cute. It's funny. There's nothing like majorly so inconsistent that it takes you out of it, except for the Tribeca moment.
And the high moment.
Yeah, it's a great time. I mean, it's the holiday season. Now is a good time to watch it.
Now is a perfect time to watch it. Here's what I recommend. Mm-hmm. You know, clean up your dinner, like after dinner one night, like get everything clean and cozy. Get into your little PJs.
Your Hanukkah PJs.
Get
preferably.
Into your Hanukkah PJs if you've got them.
We should buy some Hanukkah PJs.
We'll do that after this.
Great.
Get into your little Hanukkah PJs. Get a cup of cocoa. Make it really special. Put some, like, whipped cream and a little bit of cinnamon on there. Get into bed. Pull the covers all the way up and turn this movie on.
Yeah, or if you're home for the holidays and your family wants to find, like, an inoffensive movie you can all watch together.
Sure, that too. But
and
I recommend
you can all do those things. But maybe
I
not
recommend
getting
the first
bed.
One. Yeah. This is a movie best watch with the covers all the way up. Just to your chin. Or even maybe your nose, if you're really feeling fresh.
How do you drink your cocoa then?
I don't know. You figure it out.
Wow, we should make a blanket with a straw hole.
Okay, we got lots to do after this.
All right. And, you know, until whenever they make another Hanukkah
movie
time travel romance with lesbians.
We'll be back in no time at all.